from a galaxy far, far away.
And a bookshelf straight out of the 90s.
From Thrawn to Dantooine.
And everything in between. This is Legends Look Back.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Legends Look Back, proudly part of the Uchini Podcast Network. This is a Star Wars books podcast for people who identify as either Team Cyclops or Team Wolverine, where we celebrate our rich EU history, as well as dive into lesser-known Star Wars classics. I'm your host, Jared Mays, and I'm joined tonight by the not-at-all-scruffy-looking Freddie C.
That is an easy answer. It's a Team Cyclops. 100%.
I'm really torn, man. I'm really torn between the two. Let's find out what our producer Rick Grakes thinks. I kind of said Grakes, but I meant Grace.
Yeah. I'd probably go Wolverine, but I am torn as well.
He was doing a pretty convincing Hugh Jackman there for a second for our audio listeners.
I almost thought
we were interviewing Hugh Jackman today.
Yeah. Now, Rick, let me hear you sing some Les Mis.
Let's see. Look down. That's the wrong song. What's one of Hugh Jackman's songs?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's
been Master of the House.
Yeah.
We're gonna get a.
Can you hear the people sing?
There it is.
Singing.
That's not bad, right there.
Pretty solid.
He's a natural alto, ladies and gentlemen. Well, you know who is not a natural alto? Legendary author James Luceno. You know he's a bass because he is jacked. James Luceno. Might as well call him Jacked Luceno. We're going to be talking about legendary Star Wars author James Luceno's first foray into the galaxy far, far away with the new Jedi Order Agents of Chaos duology. Agents of Chaos, Heroes Trial, and Jedi Eclipse. Mm. That's what we're talking about here tonight on Legends Look Back. There's a lot to talk about, guys. We've got grief, coping, refugee crises, and, of course, Galactic Superweapon Revenge Tour Joyrides. But first, a little plug for something fun happening over in the Uchini Discord. Freddie, what do we have going on over there?
Yeah, a little plug here. So back by popular demand, and this one actually makes me very, very, very happy. The Uchini Comic Book Madness Competition. This is a big one. So let's see here. We've got vote for your Star Wars comics in daily matchups. Join in friendly, spirited debate. Experience the upsets. Root for the underdogs. And, of course, let your legends love loose. Join the Book Madness channel at utini.com/discord.
Well done, Freddie. It was almost like you weren't just reading that for the first time. I love it. Actually, it's been a lot of fun, that competition. There's been some really, really tough Legends versus Canon head-to-heads happening. I believe today there's still some, if you're listening to this live, shout out to our live viewers. They're the real ones for sure. Of course, today live, I believe you still have the chance to vote. This actually might have been yesterday. Tales of the Jedi was in a tough battle for its life there. Dark Empire, I'm afraid, was eliminated in the first round, but There's still a lot of fun comic book madness happening over there. So hop in on that and vote for Legends.
Do it.
But guys, speaking of Legends, we've got some absolute hard-hitting Legends gems to talk about tonight. Our coverage of the new Jedi Order rolls on. Much like, see how it works, guys? Like, as the Yuuzhan Vong conquer the known galaxy, so too we conquer the new Jedi Order series.
Or is it conquering us?
It's a bit of both.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw on Instagram the other day, you guys might have seen this too, somebody had gotten like the Lord of the Rings map tattooed as a sleeve.
Oh, yeah.
On their arm. And was it you, Rick?
Yeah.
That said you want to get one of the Legends Galaxy map?
Yeah, the outer rim, but then it would just make the contrast of a black ink stick out on my white arm much more.
Oh, yeah, on the farmer's stand.
Yeah.
Or you could do similar to what they do with like the Ottoman Empire, Mongolian Empire, show. Which part the Yuuzhan Vong took.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that actually happens in the maps for these. They progressively change the map from book to book.
That's
as great. The Yuuzhan Vong take more of the galaxy. So now Rick is just going to be studying the map for the rest of the show. No, Rick, don't do it. All right, but you can show that off, though. That's a pretty rad map, dude.
It is.
Yeah. Got to love it. Man, nothing like makes my endorphins light up faster than a Legends map. or a Legends timeline. It's all washed out, though. Very bright.
Yeah, I know. This would be the thumbnail back in the day.
Right back here. In the day. Shout out to thumbnails.
Yeah.
And also, shout out to James Luceno. Because, guys, Agents of Chaos is a duology within the New Jedi Order series, consisting of, as we said, Heroes Trial and Jedi Eclipse. These are the books that I like to use as, like, the test case for explaining ridiculously long Legends titles to people. You know what I mean, Rick?
Oh, yeah.
How would you pronounce the full title of this book?
How would I pronounce the full title?
Yeah, like, say the entire title as according to the copyright page.
Okay. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Agents of Chaos, Heroes Trial, Jedi Eclipse. Oh, did I skip The New Jedi Order?
No, you said it, but you said both titles. Cow. Anyway, yeah, it's a lot. It's a mouthful, guys.
Yeah.
It's some classic sci-fi naming conventions, right?
Yes. Sheesh. You've got a series within a series.
Yeah.
Exactly. This, we're covering the whole series within the series within the series tonight, and that is the Agents of Chaos duology. If you're like at home saying, how are these guys covering two books per month at a time? It's been a whirlwind, let me tell you.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The pace is going to slow up a bit. The next several books, we're going to go one at a time. Balance Point is up next, and I can't wait to get to it. But guys, first, about Agents of Chaos, both of these were published in the fall of 2000. August and October, as paperbacks, of course. Yeah, we've got the paperbacks of Heroes Trial and Jedi Eclipse both came out in 2000. Then, eventually, this one single-volume hardcover was published exclusively for the Sci-Fi Book Club. These comprise books 4 and 5 of the New Jedi Order, respectively, even though it feels like we've been in the New Jedi Order for our entire lives at this point. It only takes 5 books to feel like we live here now, doesn't it?
Yep. Are we the refugees?
Rick...
Jared,
I
have a funny story real quick. So
yeah.
I am just came back from bachelor time. It was a fantastic time. Just finishing these books up.
Wait, you were on The Bachelor, the TV show?
I was on my bachelor. So, you know, heading, doing my thing and just trying to finish these books, right? We're talking about finishing these books, getting to these books. And I'm running a meeting and I've got all my work stuff, and I share the wrong screen and it shows Agents of Chaos, just a summary read through or summary of some like folks just getting trying to get used to, oh yeah, that's right, okay, you know, just getting as many points as I can. And I pull it up and go, one guy goes, oh, EU. And I was like, huh? Yes, the EU. We're going to talk later.
Yeah, that's right. Let me introduce you to 150 episodes of Legends Look Back.
Also, I'm sorry I outed you in this meeting.
Anyway,
that's fantastic.
Exposed.
I love it.
Yep.
Well, Freddie, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Agents of Chaos and its legendary author? After all, Freddie, you're like the resident jacked guy on the show here. So tell us about James Luceno. That's right.
Let's see here. Yeah, James Luceno. Let's see. James Luceno is the type of author that you really need to sit down and take your time with. There's a lot's going to happen. And I would say, so at the time, James Luceno, I think, was tasked with really just maintaining the continuity of Star Wars, almost like an advisor with the continuity of Star Wars. And
yeah, came on board as part of the New Jedi Order story team.
Yeah. And so with that came, you know, his depth and his knowledge. And if we all know James Luceno, he's really, his books are deep. Jared, I'm not sure what you think.
Yeah. Hey, if you guys had to write, if you had to make a Mount Rushmore of Legends authors, who would be on it? I think James Luceno makes the cut, don't you think?
That and his biceps.
His biceps are on Mount Rushmore. Yeah. He's got a big, beautiful mustache face.
Yeah, I love it. You'd have Timothy Zahn, Michael Stackpole,
Luceno, and what do you think? John Jackson Miller is the fourth.
I think so. JJM.
Yeah, he's having his moment in canon too, with The Living Force coming out April 9th.
Nice.
Yeah, for those who are keeping track at home, featuring everybody's favorite homeboy Oppo Rancisis. Shout out to all the Oppo Rancisis and Yariel Poof stands out there. Okay, that's enough about them. We'll come back to that another day. Agents of Chaos was written by an author who would really make a name for himself as one of the greatest authors to ever write for Star Wars. I mean,
yeah.
Darth Plagueis is transcendent.
Best in fact, canon it's... book ever.
Yeah, it's Freddy's favorite canon book. Shout out to like one of the very first episodes of The Living Force for that reference from, what, 5 years ago, Freddy?
Oh, yeah, somewhere around there. It was in the single-digit episodes, that's for sure.
Yeah, so he goes on to co-write the New Jedi Order story bible and an early outline of the overarching story that would eventually be passed off to George Lucas for approval. So he's in on the ground floor of crafting the New Jedi Order. Isn't, at least according to the research that I've done on the front end, isn't contracted to write a book. Then he's asked to write a book. He's supposed to write one. Agents of Chaos supposed to be one book. Then Stackpole's Nightfall, what's it called? The Dark Tide trilogy is shaved back into a duology, which then gives birth to another Agents of Chaos book from Lucino. It's complicated, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it was supposed to be one book. Got two.
Oh, and fun fact, there was an alternative title for these, the working titles. We're digging deep, guys, tonight into the Essential Reader's Companion. Yeah, shout out to one of the greatest reference books in the history of Star Wars. Here it is. You guys want to take a guess, the working title for these?
I don't actually know.
Really cool. It's got something to do with Han Solo.
Wasn't this series supposed to be in honor of Brian Daly?
Yeah, let's come back to that. Okay. I'll go ahead and spoil these, and then we'll talk about his relationship with Daly. I think we've got that as a talking point later. He's besties with Brian Daly, who wrote the Han Solo Adventures trilogy from the 70s, which are just, chef kiss, early entries into the EU. The working titles for these were Solo Crusade and The Crooked Sky, which are so freaking cool.
Yeah.
Wow. I like that.
The Solo Crusade, that nail on the head.
That's got a ring to it, doesn't it?
That's essentially the book.
Yeah.
It could also be called Carillion Whiskey, A Star Wars Story. Lucino eventually stepped in to write Agents of Chaos and concluded the epic saga with the unifying force. Rick, show us those covers briefly, guys. Let's go around the horn here. We've got four covers to choose from. You've got the American Heroes Trial, American Jedi Eclipse, Japanese Heroes Trial, and Japanese Jedi Eclipse. Which one of these four is your favorite? They're so cool.
Is that Han with a mullet?
For sure. All the bros have mullets in New Jedi Order. All the homies have mullets. Luke has a mullet.
Even the Yuuzhan Vong.
Everybody gets a mullet. What's that, Rick?
Even the Yuuzhan Vong.
No nose, but they'd have mullets. Yeah. Oh, wait. We got a Lumpy appearance here? Is that Lumpy?
Maybe.
Shout out to Lumpy.
Yeah, Lumpy's a real one. I think Lumpy has a mullet as well.
Leia does, too.
Oh, yeah. This is NASCAR Star Wars here.
NASCAR Star Wars.
Gotta love it. All right, guys, what's your favorite of the four covers? I'm gonna choose the orange one.
Oops.
Which one is that? Japanese
Heroes Trial.
Japanese Heroes Trial, the orange
those
one.
Are beautiful.
Yep, that is.
With the Lumpy and everything.
Yep. I'm gonna go
bearded
with
Han.
Mullet
I like to Mullet Han, is that the blue in there?
Yeah, that's the space. You've got some AT-ATs down there as well.
Uh-huh. Make an appearance at all?
It just Star Warsifies it a little bit.
I feel like they talked about somebody being an AT-AT.
Oh, there was one in the very beginning.
Yeah.
It was one of the smaller walkers. What's his name? The Jedi who goes
Worth Skitter?
Worth.
Worth.
He enters the scene in like a AT-ST or something. It's pretty funny.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, he's got a really cool appearance in this book. All right, let us know in the comments which one of these four covers is your favorite. I do like the handlebar mustache. Is that the Droma?
Droma.
Yeah, man, there's some good ones. I would definitely say the Japanese are better than the American.
Yeah.
But I think I like the art of the Hero's Trial with the color scheme of this one.
Ooh, yeah.
We do love our purples on Legends Look Back, don't we?
We like our purples.
Galactic purple, see-through.
That's right.
Atomic purple, that's right.
Yeah, atomic purple, there you go.
Yeah. Come back to that in a second. I've got something to tell you about that. Anyway, let's get into the show. What do you guys say?
I like it.
So, spoiler warning here for the Agents of Chaos duology from the New Jedi Order, Heroes Trial, and Jedi Eclipse by James Luceno. We'll go full spoilies at this point. Here we go. The Yuuzhan Vong continues to wage war on the New Republic and Luke Skywalker's Jedi Order. About half a year has passed from the start of the war. Han Solo, grappling with grief over Chewbacca's death and fueled by copious amounts of Corellian whiskey, embarks on a solitary vengeance mission. Joined by his old friend Roa, Han pursues Rek Desh, a collaborator with the enemy Peace Brigade, Yuuzhan Vong's sellouts, allied with the Hutts. Meanwhile, the Yuuzhan Vong launch attacks, prompting the New Republic's intervention and revealing treachery within their ranks. As Solo and Roa pursue Desh, they confront the chaos of the Yuuzhan Vong invasion firsthand. Their journey intertwines with the New Republic's efforts to thwart the enemy advance. Surprise, Leia is there, but Han's not playing family man at the moment. Ready?
Jedi and military leaders strategize against the invaders, enlisting allies like the Hapes Consortium and contemplating the deployment of ancient superweapon Center Point Station. Amidst these maneuvers, betrayals, and alliance shift, the balance of force, forcing characters like Solo and Skywalker to confront their roles in the conflict. In a cinematic showdown, the New Republic unleashes Center Point Station, hoping to turn the tide against the Yuuzhan Vong Armada. However, unforeseen consequences lead to devastating losses for both sides, altering the course of the war completely. Han's dastardly cousin, Thrakken, not the thrift store, but Thrakken Sal Solo, hijacks Center Point Station, turning it loose on the Vong, but decimating the Hapen fleet caught in the crossfire.
I liked your sound effect there, Freddy. Nice.
That was good.
That was not a sound effect in post-production, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. That was the wonderful, the talented Freddy C. You're up, Rick.
Cool. So, the Vong unleash an insidious attempt at subterfuge, sending the priestess Elon and her familiar, Vergaer, as supposed defectors. Elon unleashes comb spores in an attempt to poison New Republic leadership, but she's trapped in an escape pod, subjected to her own poison, and dies. And her mysterious companion, Vergaer, mysteriously offers her tears to heal Mara Jade Skywalker. And as the dust settles, new alliances form, old wounds deepen, and the struggle against the Yuuzhan Vong enters a new phase of uncertainty, leaving the galaxy's fate hanging in the balance. That was some good writing there, buddy.
Yeah, that was the AI. Yeah, that one, that last sentence. That summary, listen, the summaries are hard to write, okay? Especially with, like, time crunches. The summary is one of those memes of, like, from Rocky, the white arm and the black arm doing a big handshake, me and the robot tag teaming. Because I throw a little spice in there. In fact, with this one, I put in all the summaries and I say, all right, write me a summary that's 3 paragraphs long, but I give it, you know, like 20 paragraphs, right? And then it gave me absolute garbage, to which I respond, that was garbage, do better. And I did that 3 or 4 times until I got something serviceable that I punched up. But yeah. It gets all the credit. Love that.
Yep.
Love that the one sentence that you like was from our robot overlords. All hail the robot overlords, unless the Yuuzhan Vong are listening, in which case, down with the robots. Okay. Yeah. guys, how do these stack up against the other New Jedi Order books? How do you rank Agents of Chaos?
Oh, wow. I feel like this one was definitely like as if I was trying to jack into the Matrix, you know, and trying to download all the information from this book, and it just wasn't going fast enough. There's so much happening, so many new...
It's dense.
It is dense. A lot of different names, a lot of different factions. This is definitely one of those books where I feel like you need to read it maybe 2 or 3 times once you start mapping things out and who's connected to what.
Right, and this was, I think, my 3rd read-through, and so it does come together clearer.
Yeah.
But Lucino's writing... Stackpole's very breezy. Stackpole is like, it's bubblegum. Trying to read Lucino is like eating the meatiest steak you've ever eaten in your entire life. It's a porterhouse.
Trying to eat the entire bag of Big League Chew.
And then when you have an AI read it to you, it's even harder, but that's fine.
Yeah, I'm going to make this good, borderline great. You can tell that Lucino's got greatness in him, and yet this is like his debut album. Like he's trying to get warmed up. You know, it's his first lap around the track. For me, yeah. It doesn't stack up to the masterpiece that is... It's a good follow-up, but it's not quite on the same level with the masterpiece that Stackpole's Dark Tide duology. Though there's greatness coming. There really is.
Yeah.
What do you think, Rick?
Yeah, I think what Freddie said really had the nail on the head. It's dense, a lot to work through, a lot of characters and intricate moments. So I think overall, I'd call it good to great, but there are absolutely chapters of Masterpiece. Yeah. I remember freaking out at the very beginning of Jedi Eclipse. That first chapter was like one of my favorite chapters of Star Wars so far. Like, it was incredible. Felt like you're you can see the movie in your head, all that kind of stuff. Like, it was
the intro, Rick, by itself, right? The intro with basically the proclamation of, well, I guess this is a battle of gods. I was like, whoa, that's a hot start.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, classic James Luceno, but man, it doesn't keep that same pace the whole book, but it was, it was good. It's good.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put it. You know, Luceno is great at his intros. First chapter of the Unifying Force, when we get there in a year. Anyway, it's hopefully, it is absolutely cinematic. I love the way you said that, Rick. Mm. Cinematic. I mean, it's like you can see the movie. It's like commandos infiltrating a refugee camp. Kyle Katarn's like, we're here to break you out of prison. I mean, it's fantastic. Absolutely. So, and Plagueis opens up hot with Tenebris.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Number one cool. canon book.
Number one canon book. I love Eric's comment here in the chat. Can we flash that up on the screen? He says, I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords. Sometimes. Right. Unless the Yuuzhan Vong... unless the Yuuzhan Vong are listening. In which case, no robots. No robots anywhere, except for the one over my shoulder.
Yep.
It's not real. Anyway, guys, let's get into it. This duology, in some ways, is like some of the heaviest hitting thematically out of any Star Wars we've read. Freddie, we've been doing this over 150 episodes, you and me.
Yes.
This is quite possibly the weightiest Star Wars book that we've read, don't you think?
I had to read this, listen to the audiobook at 2 speed, and listen to the abridged just to feel like I understood what was happening.
I mean, we're dealing with two titanic realities of war among a dozen other gigantic plot points, and that's grief and refugees. Let's start with grief, guys. Let's just start off with some grief here at the top of the discussion. Does Luceno do justice to the grief that Han Solo would have felt following the death of Chewbacca? I mean, that's what really sets the tone for the NJO right out the gate. Chewie, dead. How do you think that he captures... Stackpole doesn't do a ton with it. He basically just shows, hey, Han is drinking and he's not being a very good family man, and then he kind of saves the character for Luceno. Luceno then makes these very, very Han-centric books. How does he do with Han's grief?
It's so interesting. You know what? Okay, I'm going to say, here's a story. Here's a quick little story, and I feel like this is exactly what Han Solo is likely going through. Jared and Rick, you both are religious men, and there's going to be a lot there. There's one time when my great-grandma passed away. I think I was about 17 years old. I'll never forget getting a call. Mind you, she was about 100 and something, right? So, like, expected and whatnot. I just remember being...
Wait, 100 and something?
Yeah, she was, you know, her sister...
Over 100,
yeah,
Freddie?
Yeah, her sister was 110.
That's awesome, man.
Like, 113. Like, they were all in the 100 and somethings. And, you know, when it came, I was like, it was understood. I got it. I understood. But, you know, I was sad for a bit. But then I got a little hyper, you know? Like, I was almost a little hyper and... I was playing soccer and, you know, I scored two goals, but I was just, it was like shutting down the emotion of sorts and almost just like taking your grief out on, well, what happens to me? Who cares? You know, I didn't care if I broke my ankle. I didn't care about anything at that moment. And looking back, I was just super hyper and, you know, that's how I felt. I was like, oh yeah, I feel good right now. And I feel like that's what Han's going through.
Trying to mask his grief by doing something he knows best, which is he's going to go and be a smuggler. And so he's going to go and find this rogue buddy. I love nihilistic little Freddy C. playing soccer with reckless abandon.
Can we get the grief cycle graphic up here? Is this denial? Is that the stage we're in at this point? But yeah, it's...
yeah, I mean, Han, he's in the thick of it. And there's no right way to grieve. Yeah. I don't know that there's a wrong way. There is, to if you can never find a way to handle it. But Han, it's understandable. And I think that Lucino really does capture that well. Pushes his family away. Yep. And after my mom died, I remember my grandfather who had lost a child. You know, my aunt died young. Grandfather pulled me aside and he said, "Hey, I made a mistake when I was younger and I pushed my family away." And he said, "You need to make sure that even though this is hard, that you're there for your family." Mm. And I'll never forget that. You know, it meant a lot to me. Han doesn't have that. Mm. instead, he's got the Millennium Falcon full of grief.
Ghosts.
You know?
It's a ghost ship.
Right, right. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Rick?
I think, the dynamics of Han and Leia are very compelling because it does show... He is, you know, we always joke about turning it off and back on again. That's essentially what happened. He was shook to the core, and he reverts to his most basic operating mode, where he is a loner, and he's reckless, and he does what he thinks is right. And so he forgets he has a family, essentially. And it's uncomfortable. You know, this is a hero who's doing something like abandoning his family to go... do these reckless, you know, missions, these crusades, if you will.
Yeah, there it is.
But
it was almost in the
that
title.
Was cute,
yeah,
Rick.
Thank you. But yeah, so I think I really like the thick discomfort between Leia and Han throughout these two books.
It works, but it's not fun to read.
No,
it's realistic,
yes,
but it's not enjoyable.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's the difference, right? You look with Bubblegum Stackpole versus Big League Chew. Uncino, you're reading almost real life, and it's definitely a lot more mature kind of read, right? It's reading this, I sensed some things, and I was like, okay, it's very interesting. Versus, you know, space pirates, and well, we still get things blown up. We'll get there.
Yeah, it takes a while. There's a payoff. Yeah. There's always a super weapon.
Yeah, can we talk about that at some point? Like how
we'll get there.
It's racket.
The super weapon. Save it for the end. You can't blow the super weapon right out the gate, man. But let's peel back the curtain on real life here. You tried to bring this up earlier in the show, Freddie. Peeling back the curtain between the fictional and the real life universes. I think we've got a photo of the two of them together too. These were, of course, James Luceno's first Star Wars novels. He was best friends and writing partners with one of the Mount Rushmore writers of the early EU, Brian Daly, author of the Han Solo adventures. Daly is pictured to the far left in this image that we're looking at on screen. Luceno then is to his left, our right, with that glorious mustache, and I'm pretty sure next to him is my dad. I am like 90% sure that's my dad. Well, I'll show this in the Discord later. It looks a lot like my dad. It can't be, but Freddie, I could also picture you wearing that hat, man.
Yeah. That stash, though. I am absolutely digging that stash.
I don't know.
Yeah,
the fourth guy's stash is where it's at for me. That's
there's a great friendship between the two of them. There's all kinds of stuff out there about them that you can look up. Scuba Joe is like a resident expert on this friendship. And so they like would go on cross country trips together. They like hiked to the Mayan ruins where they did A New Hope was filmed. You know, the Yavin base, like chopping through the bush and with machetes together. These guys they're a legendary pair. They are Han and Chewie in many ways. Brian Daly, author of the Han Solo adventures, they even saw Star Wars. Get this, guys! They saw Star Wars in theaters together in 1977.
Wow!
They
before it was A New Hope, guys. That's wow. They were there at ground zero. So Daly would discuss his story treatments with Lucino, and they had a wonderfully collaborative friendship. Daly was known Daly, like, personally, for me, knowing what I know about the backstory of Star Wars writers, is like my favorite hero to root for in the real world behind the scenes. So I have a special affinity for him personally. Daly would discuss his story treatments with Lucino. He was known as a Han Solo type. So Lucino writes his like obituary for Star Wars Insider magazine and says, like a eulogy, and he says that he was Han Solo, which is why he wrote
him
so well.
You can almost see it. I mean, look at him.
Look at that swagger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was a charismatic, fly-by-the-seat-of-his-pants rogue type, and so Daly died tragically in 96, and considering, so that's several years, just a few years before this is published. Considering that these books are about Han's grief, guys, hold on to something. Find yourself a life preserver, because we're going off the deep end here tonight. Mm. Considering that these books are about Han's grief and getting reacquainted with old friends at the same time, how does all of that behind-the-scenes lore inform your view of Agents of Chaos? For me, that backdrop totally changes my view of these books.
Mm. Yeah, it really does.
It's heavy.
You kind of see Han Solo as you know, Lucino, I feel like, would understand how Han Solo would act during a certain instance and what it would take for Han Solo to become challenged, right? To face the things that he really doesn't want to face, because, I mean, it's hard. It's so difficult. And seeing him interact with Chewie's family and them understanding that he's just not ready, right? And I mean, it's tough. It's definitely tear-jerking stuff.
And then avoiding Kashyyyk later because he's not ready to deal with that. Like,
yeah.
Oh, man.
That's tough.
Mm-hmm. Man, that definitely does change the perspective. Reminded me of the story of the Inigo Montoya actor, you know, the loss of his father and how that affected his performance in Princess Bride.
I don't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, he just lost his father to cancer, I believe, and so when he's doing his big monologue with the six-fingered man or whatever, he's super emotional, and it's absolutely genuine.
Wow. Good to know.
Didn't know that. Wow. I've always kind of, like, laughed at that scene, thinking it was funny, but there's... Oh.
Yeah.
Shot to the heart! Mm. That got me.
Backstory.
Yep.
You know, for me, I think that the way that this real-world situation informs my reading of Agents of Chaos is that it becomes a vehicle for Lucino to explore his own grief.
Yeah.
And so it's complicated because it's about Han Solo, who is kind of the friend that he lost personally, but it's about Han Solo having lost his best friend. So it's kind of this twisted web, and yet it becomes a way. And that's, I think, why he captures Solo's grief so spectacularly in this. It's quite possibly the most realistic portrayal of grief that I've read in a book.
Yeah.
In fiction.
Even in this era, you know, in the early aughts, I would say it's as realistic as it is now.
Hmm. Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's extremely poignant. It just leaps off the page. But it's tough to read. It's so realistic that it is brutal. Hmm. And so Lucino had said that writing a dejected and grief-stricken Han Solo was challenging for him, but he wanted to take him on a hero's journey. Shelley Shapiro of Del Rey said that Bantam-era authors, who, by the way, Skooma Joe says in the chat that Lucino read every single Bantam Star Wars book in preparation for this, every single Bantam-era book, which I just did last year. It's a chore. And you can tell it pays off. He makes a ton of references. You can tell he appreciates the EU, which is cool because we do too. So Shelley Shapiro of Del Rey said that the Bantam era authors often did not know what to do with Solo, which I would agree. I would agree.
Yeah.
Except for Daly.
Yeah.
And so Lucino said Han had not been able to grow and evolve in the same way as his Force-using family. So I wonder, guys, how successful was Lucino at giving Han a character arc in these novels? In many ways, for the first time since, what, A Courtship of Princess Leia?
Yeah.
How successful was he at Solo's character arc? We've talked about the grief, but what about where he goes from there?
Go ahead, Rick. I'm going to let you take this one first.
I think there's 100% character development. I'm not sure if it's an arc, like a full, you know, it's still a story in progress. And so I feel like it's, I'm unsure what the big picture is still. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. If he's going to come back to his family and repair those relationships, or if he's going to continue to go on this path. But I think his relationship with Droma is really cool. He's not replacing Chewie by any means, and they talk about that, but it's still a picture of Han's loyalty and his, you know, friendship, camaraderie and stuff that it's cool to see that there are things that are changing about Han, but some things still stay the same despite the grief. It's buried under some grief, but he still kind of stays the same. So it's he's definitely moving as a character. I just don't know where he's going.
I love that. Well said.
That's really nice. Yeah. Rick, you did a great job. You know, we haven't really seen, I guess, the mental acuity of Han really fleshed out in a lot of our books, right? We see his kids. They're growing right in front of us, mainly because they have a mentor who has opened them up to their feelings.
Yeah, a ton of character growth for them. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Han has always had a buffer for his feelings, right? He can say, oh, whatever, and Chewbacca might be like, eh, and he's like, I'm sorry, you know? Something very similar to that. And I feel like that
Freddie gets it, y'all.
That was his check, right? His check and balance. And without that, he's kind of spiraling, right? And he does need to learn, and he does need to look at the situation and grow in the way that his kids have grown. And I'd say that his kids are likely, you know, they've got some growing to do, but in terms of maturity, mental maturity, like they're all coming to the point of like, you know, what do we do? Do we kill? Do we not kill? And that's got to be incredible to face. So, you know, Han is just, I don't know if Han doesn't feel like he's very useful, right? He's like, okay, my wife's going over here to do that. My kids are off. I'm just going to go do my thing. What am I going to do? No one cares. And within that, he does go on his journey, his crusade, he's on a path of, we'll see, you know, I'm not sure yet. I haven't read all of these novels, but he's on a path of something. And, just the trouble he's gotten in by himself, the things he's been able to discover, man, no wonder the rebels want his intelligence.
Sure. And it's a 19 book series. These are books 4 and 5. I would say that we don't get a really satisfying culmination to this journey that Han's on until after this series. Though we do see, you know, some sense of resolution within the series. But I would say the next one that really does it well is Millennium Falcon by, let me see who wrote that one. Oh, yeah. James Luceno.
Wow.
Which comes after this entire series and after Legacy of the Force.
Okay.
So we've got 9 plus 14. So what is that? 24 more books, Rick, and you'll get there.
24.
Good.
You're almost there.
Woo!
Not getting any younger. Oh, the good news is the Legends books, they're not really getting any older. I mean, they're there.
They're there.
So they're waiting for you, literally right behind you, Rick.
And maybe maybe next year they'll all be on Essentials Collection with audiobooks and everything will be great.
We are getting some great unabridged audiobooks. That's right. We love those. We've got Yoda Dark Rendezvous out now. Yeah. We've got I, Jedi out now. Mm. So let's move on, guys. We've talked about grief. Let's talk about refugees. The refugee situation in this tees up a plot point that's going to come back around later in the series. We'll say that much. Won't say how. But once again, a reflection of some real life realities that, I mean, has been on the news this week in the U.S. This very week, especially for you, Rick, down in Texas. So how does the refugee situation in this duology reflect the real world realities of war? You know, you've got 1 minute, guys.
There's one word. There's one word.
Just kidding. It's a tough topic.
I could do it in one word.
Okay.
Destabilizing. That is exactly what it is. It's destabilizing. It's an influx of peoples that were not accounted for. You know, census is there for a reason. They take account in what's going on. Cities can build budgets based off of that. Things become complicated when you insert an unknown scenario. And that's the thing that James Luceno does, right? In a lot of books, they gloss over all the real stuff that actually happens behind the scenes. Luceno does not gloss over it. This is real. during battle, during wars, you get people who are caught up in the mess and they don't have anywhere to go because where they were from or where they were at is not survivable. And of course, you know, with that comes the unknown, right? Like, who are these people? They're definitely different than us. They're culturally different, right? They're going to take the resources that we have locally that now we don't know, like, will we have enough for ourselves? It just creates...
If we put them on our planet, are they going to change our culture?
Yeah.
Or, you know, crime, you know, like, things are different. You know, there's a lot, there's unknowns, which is why, in a lot of cases, people have camps to filter through, to educate, to show folks, you know, and in sense, like, that can also get abused in a lot of ways.
Sure. Hang on to that. That's huge.
Yeah.
Someone may or may not want to abuse the situation of coming in to refugee camps in this series.
It's real life. And that's just the nature of it, right? Like, there's no scenario. No one has a plan. I guess there's maybe a small plan for refugees, but in reality, you don't know where these issues are going to happen. So you don't know who's going to be a refugee.
Yeah. Exactly. You know. You don't. It can happen to anybody at any time.
Yep.
And that's what really sets in this series, I think, in particular. What do you think, Rick?
Yeah, I think, again, going back to that first chapter of the second book, Leia has to decide who gets to make it on the ships and escape and who is going to be left with Yuuzhan Vong. And just that decision, that ethical, moral quandary that she chooses life or death for somebody, and she wrestles with that, and she's like, this is not fair, this is not right, you know, nobody should have to choose the fate of somebody else like this. And the way that it highlights the tendency for people to circle the wagons and protect themselves and the us at the cost of the them, and it's tragic and frustrating. And I really like how Lucino really helps you see the perspective of the refugee and see what is it like to fear for your life, to wonder if you're going to eat in this next place, if you're going to be accepted. And the Wren, it's a really cool vehicle to explore those differences, whether it's, you know, race or religion or whatever, ethnicity, you know, all those things. That's a really cool way to talk about real world issues in a sci-fi universe, you know? And so it was very powerful and compelling and, you know, frustrating, all the emotions. I love that Leia is, you know, the poster child of trying to do something to help, though.
She's a proper politician.
Yeah. Pure to her character as well.
Yeah. Well said, guys. Dang. You guys are absolutely killing it tonight. We got some good stuff. Man, these books are tough to read, but rewarding to digest. And I'm enjoying that a lot. You know, Rick, you talk about there being this sense of, like, race and religion playing a part. Lucino has said behind the scenes that he bases the Wren off of the Romani people, who have been an oppressed people group in Europe. And so he does take some of that and bring it to real life. You know, this is a series which, by the way, is called Star Wars, in case you didn't know that. And yet what we're often talking about are, like, laser swords and wizardry and spaceships. But this is probably the first time for me as an EU reader to deal with some really heavy hitting realities of war, which is grief and refugee crises. And so Lucino puts the war in Star Wars, you could say. Love it. Let's talk about that. We mentioned that Droma, the Wren, is based off the Romani people. Let's talk about them a little bit. You know, Han has lost a companion in Chewbacca, and now the question is he going to be a loner? But he can't. He's got all these connections. If you've read the EU up to this point, the Han Solo Adventures, the Crispin Han Solo books, Han's got buddies as smugglers, I mean, in every little pocket of the galaxy, and they're going to pop up. And Han is like, leave me alone. I'm grumpy. And they're like, actually, you know, fate has brought us together. And so we've got two characters who, and there's more than those, but two, I think, who really stand out in this duology. Droma and Roa, which this is why Freddie was exploring the Wook this week, because it's easy to get them confused.
Oh, yeah.
Which of Han's tag-along characters are the most compelling in the wake of Chewbacca's loss, in your opinion? What role do these unique characters serve? One that... Roa is one that Lucino has brought back from the Han Solo books, but then Droma is one that he crafted himself. Which of these tag-along characters is most compelling in your opinion, guys?
Well, man, this is a tough one. I feel like I can't even remember who's who right now. I think it might be Roa.
Roa
fortune teller?
Is the... Or... the no, Droma's the Wren.
Droma's the Wren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which people are refugees.
Yeah.
Roa is like the smuggler buddy from the old days who's helping him track down Wreck
Dash.
That's
right. That's
from
right.
the Peace Brigade.
That's right. Okay. Well, the interesting thing is that there's definitely no Chewbacca, right? There's no one like Chewbacca.
Yeah.
And
he can't fill his shoes.
There's no,
he didn't wear shoes.
And
you get it.
You can tell, right, that the shoes aren't trying to be filled. And there's actually, Han had a really interesting moment where he was talking to, I'm not sure if it was Droma or Roa or who it was, that he's a mechanic, not really a pilot. And that really puts Chewbacca's importance in the Millennium Falcon, right? Mm-hmm. And seeing Han interact with Droma, I mean, it's interesting for him to face his demons with someone who's already faced demons and is currently facing demons in a way.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And Han gets perspective from that, which that's to Han's intelligence, right? Han gets perspective, and I wouldn't say that we see a path forward for him in recovering, but we see him coming to certain obstacles where you're like, okay, that's step number one. Okay, thank you. Good job, Han.
he gets to be a help to somebody, like Chewbacca's been a help to him.
Yeah.
Though he doesn't really want to be. And there's something about that begrudging helpfulness that's compelling. And Droma's people are they're in trouble. But Droma, like, doesn't take any crap.
No.
Like, he's not real friendly in the same way that Chewie is, like, you know, the golden retriever.
Which Chewie can be firm and harsh and, you know, stand his own ground as well. But, yeah.
Or rip your arms out of their socket.
Yeah. Sure. But Droma, definitely, he has that confidence, I guess, and swagger. Yeah. Of I'm not gonna let this cocky pilot boss me around. I'm gonna, you know,
he always reminds me of Lando in a way. That, like,
sure,
that you, like, they can stand on their own. They don't, like, Chewbacca and Han kind of needed each other, but Lando can do his own thing, and Droma, I feel like, could have his own story, and we'd love it.
Yeah. And I appreciate that Lucino didn't take the easy road in bringing Lando into this. Lando does factor into the series eventually, but doesn't play a huge role yet. And so it would be easy to say, okay, Chewie's dead, let's bring in Lando as Han's buddy. But instead, Lucino crafts his own character that then is this template for exploring the refugee crisis, which I just love. It's fantastic. And so that's not the only original character that Lucino introduces. He also introduces a mysterious bird-like character, Vergère, who may or may not be one of the most significant characters in the entire EU. So, but up to this point is kind of just sneakily plopped in here, and it's like, what? Don't you type her name into the Wook, Rick. I saw you highlight that in the
Not
show
me.
Notes.
That's Freddie.
That's Freddie. Don't look her up. You're going to get it spoiled. Don't do it. Vergère is definitely set up to be somebody. Guys, as two people who have not yet read forward from this, what's your initial impression of Vergère? We're going to clip this and come back to it. This will be very significant.
Go ahead, Rick.
I think she took the route I wanted her to take when she set up as this essentially glorified slave to the priestess, where she's a familiar, whatever that means, and, you know, she's part of her household kind of thing.
It's like, is it a pet? Is it a friend?
Yeah, yeah. And so I was super glad when she takes the first chance she gets to leave and doesn't look back. And that was fun. And then the whole magical tears thing. Okay.
Yeah. What about that? What did you think of that, Rick?
I mean, it was convenient. But
wait, quick question. Anybody know, like, animal biology, anatomy? Do birds have tears? Can avians cry?
And Harry Potter, don't phoenixes cry? Is that the same
thing? Oh, that's like... right.
Nerd. All right, Freddie, what do you think?
Yeah,
first impressions.
First impression of Vergère. Yeah, so Vergère, there's a story, a real life story of it's some sort of camp that kids get kidnapped into and try to get reformed, and it feels very much like that moment where Vergère has just been planning and waiting probably for ages and ages on where am I gonna, how am I gonna escape, how do I get out of this situation. Not exactly sure how this is going to develop, but you know, the ability, the tears, you know, I don't really understand the whole tears and getting that. I guess that was the thing the whole time. But I really don't know too much about Vergère, what's going on here. I feel like I can't believe anybody or anything at this point. So I just remain cautiously optimistic.
Hey, that's actually kind of an insightful way of putting it with Vergère. Don't know if I can believe anything about her.
Yeah.
Ah, hang on to that. Somebody clip that. We'll come back to it. Put that on Instagram. Put it on the YouTube shorts.
Just want to defend myself and say, you guys keep saying Vergère, but the synthetic Scottish voice I listened to for 16 hours definitely rolled those R's.
Vergère.
So,
I like it.
Yeah.
Good job, Rich.
I don't know what the correct pronunciation is. We'll see if we can get book a Lucino interview or like a workout sesh, one of the two. Either way, it'll work. And we'll ask him what he thinks. Vergère, rolling the R's. That's fantastic. Well, hey, earlier in the episode, and I think we've got a picture of this, we've got to show off a shot, a glorious mugshot of Centerpoint Station. Centerpoint Station makes its grand return into the EU. Look at that beautiful super weapon. Makes its grand return into the EU here.
Look at the size of that thing.
That's no moon. Lucino is paying homage to the Bantam era EU coming from the Corellian trilogy here. There's a couple of different plans at work. On the one hand, you've got Elin's ruse, and then you've got the Centerpoint Station. Just why don't we just blow up the friggin' Yuuzhan Vong? Hey, I got an idea. Why don't we just blow it up, right? Evaluate those two plans, guys. Which one's better? The sneaky infiltrate the New Republic plan that Elin, the priestess of the Yuuzhan Vong, has, or Thraken Sal Solo's plan, which is, hey, what if we just blow him up?
Thraken, it's so simple.
Yeah. What a jerk. Freaking hate that guy.
He is a jerk. But we love his thrift store.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He's got some real treasures. For sure. Rick, lead us off.
Man, I don't know why I'm like stuck on the Princess Bride, but all of the espionage and counter-espionage is like the logic puzzle on Princess Bride of, obviously you're doing this, which makes me think that, you know, like that's just what I see of all this. We're going to make them think that Corellia is weak and vulnerable so that they'll attack Bothui, which is where our fleet is. Yeah, and so like it's just a that was entertaining, but was also kind of muddy. Yeah. I did like the ethical dilemmas that Anakin has to go through with using the station. I thought that was really good. We've talked about these before, but I'm always I get tickled. I sound like an old man now. I get tickled whenever I hear some legend storyline that has been recycled in some canon story.
There's a lot of them, man. This is a lot.
Yeah, like this Han Solo being connected to a droid uprising, or a super weapon that can shoot across the galaxy at another system. That was interesting. So,
except for Centerpoint Station's like this ancient piece of celestial technology, and Anakin Solo's imprinted on it, and so then you've got Han's evil cousin.
Yeah,
that, I can't wait for that one to come back into canon. Han's evil cousin. Wait till Thraken Sal Solo is bursting onto the scene of the Book of Boba Fett season 2. That one's gonna be great. Gonna love that one for sure. If Freddy's done having his conniption over there, we can get him to weigh in on which one of these plans is better. Elin's or Thraken Sal Solo's?
Well, we know that subterfuge is probably one of the best, but it takes the longest. if you have that patience, then you know, that's the route you go. I'm thinking of the Sith, right? The Sith is what I'm thinking of. They had eons to be able to plan a what I believe to be like the most solid covert plan ever. Whereas
ironclad.
Yeah. I mean, it was patience. Believe it or not,
I suggest patience.
The Sith have patience, but once you've kind of started an all-out war, it may not be the fastest way to get to what you need to do. Although, you know, the good thing about it is you can start off with the spying, and then later on you, as you accrue more information, because that's really what it is. Information wins wars. And I think that's what needs to happen, instead of let's just decimate everything, because for all you know, you could be decimating 1/8 of their fleet but half of yours. So
yeah, I mean, we saw that in Vector Prime. They won that first foray. Yu Shanvang were like, yeah, well, guess what, we've got world ships upon world ships upon world ships.
Yeah. We just started.
This is unrelenting,
and I feel like you do need to have a spy feature, a covert feature. You do need to sow discord. You know, when you're at war, weapons aren't just things that you shoot. It's how can we destabilize everything, from politics to religion? Let's destabilize it all. Money, currency, everything. That's what you go for. You don't just go for one thing. So, and you know, and that's what Thrakken, I think, did wrong, which was just destroyed stuff without really thinking about any consequence.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, what a solo. He's like, let's find a way to blow it up.
Yeah.
it's almost exactly the line out of The Force Awakens. There's got to be a way to blow it up.
Yeah,
and it's way ahead of the curve.
A different song than Han Solo, What a Man Solo. It's Thrakken, Sal Solo, Oh Solo.
I love it. I still need to listen to that in the unabridged audio. We'll get to it. Well, that will do it for this week's episode of Legends Look Back. If you want to catch up with us and see what we've got coming up here in a couple of weeks on Tuesday, April 9th, a couple of weeks from tonight, we're going to do our next news catch-up. Guys, we've got a Last Command 4-pack Black Series to talk about. I found some Phantom Menace KFC toys at my local store. We're going to talk about these here in a couple of weeks. And then after that, the next roundtable is Balance Point by Kathy Tires in late April. That'll do it for tonight. If you're looking for other podcasts to expand your fandom, be sure to check out the rest of the lineup in the Youtini Podcast Network, including the Youtini Avatar Show, The Cosmic Force, The Star Wars Archives, and the newest addition to the network. You got the picture, Rick. I'm waiting for you. You got it. I believe in you, buddy. Batter up. Na-na-na-na-na-na. There it is. The Youtini Baseball Show. Gotta love it. I've been talking with those guys. They've, I think, got some great content down the pipeline, up on the mound, if you will. On deck, in the batter's box, you get it. You get the picture. Check out the Youtini Baseball Show. If you are already a proud member of the United on Patreon, thank you. Special shout out to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Buzinski on our Jedi High Council. No longer called Jedi High Council. I said the word Jedi. It's not there. I said the word. And James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo at our Captain tier for their amazing support. Catch us live every other Tuesday night at 8:30 Central at youtube.com/@YutiniVault. Ring that bell if you want to get notified whenever we go live. Remember to sub to the channel, leave us a review in your podcast platform of choice. If you like your thoughts right on the show, you can email us at legendslookback@utini.com. We're also on Twitter at legendslookback. Let's keep the party going and hop on over into Discord, where we are continuing the conversation with other Utinians about this week's episode in the hashtag LegendsBooks channel. All right, that's it for us. Keep exploring, keep sharing, and let's keep on expanding the universe together. May the Force be with you.
This is a Youtini broadcast.